who will be selected number one? Which teams will trade up and down? And who will be crowned Mr. Irrelevant? It's time for the 2024 NFL Draft. And iHeart is your home for the NFL Podcast Network. Get all the insights, mock drafts, and trade rumors with podcasts like Around the NFL and Move the Sticks. Open the free iHeart app and search NFL Draft for dozens of podcasts, playlists, and live stations to get you ready for the weekend's big event.
Let's go!
Listen to NFL Podcasts on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search NFL to start listening.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Volume.
Boxing with Chris Mannix is presented by FanDuel. Football season is here, and there's no better place to get in the action than with FanDuel. The app is safe, secure, and easy to use. FanDuel always has exclusive offers. When you win, you'll get paid fast. FanDuel has lots of ways to play, like the spread, money line, over-unders, team totals, player props, and so much more. Jump into the action at any time during the game with live betting, combine multiple bets on the same game in a same-game parlay, and try out the same game parlay plus. So use promo code BOXING and download the FanDuel app today to make every moment more this football season.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
So I guess we have to start with the judging. Sergio
please,
Mora.
Please.
DAZN boxing analyst, former junior middleweight champion. We are in Las Vegas. Right outside that window is T-Mobile Arena. We were there tonight, ringside, calling Canelo Golovkin 3 for DAZN. The positive, the right guy won. Canelo Alvarez won this fight. Trilogy completing fight. Alvarez too young, too fresh, too fast, too powerful. Golovkin at age 40 just didn't have enough left in the tank. But Sergio, we agreed this was a lopsided fight. I officially scored it 10 rounds to 2. I polled my media brethren from ringside. They had it 10-2, 11-1. Somehow, two of the judges of Canelo Golovkin 3 had it 115-113, which means if Golovkin had won one more round, we would have had another draw, which would have been wild.
Incredible. You got the opinion of your writers and your brethren. I got the opinion of former world champions, Marco Antonio Barrera, Sean Porter, Daniel Jacobs, Jessica McCaskill, myself, all of us. Scored it the same. Two rounds max for Golovkin. I think Barrera said three. But either way, three rounds max. How the hell does Steve Weisfeld, who I consider one of the best judges in boxing, have it 115-113? I mean, three judges had it that close. 116-112 and two 115-113.
116-112 is not atrocious.
That's not atrocious. 115-113 is a disgusting one because that means the last round, it would have been another draw. And can you imagine if we would have had another draw? We would have had to see a fourth fight. We got a clear winner tonight. That was Canelo Alvarez. It wasn't the knockout that he wanted or the knockout that everyone expected, but it was a convincing win. Yeah. It was a convincing win. We got the right winner. I don't want to see a fourth fight. I do not want to see Triple G at 168 anymore. I don't even want to see Triple G against the elite. If he wants to continue his career and not leave money on the table and fight mandatory challengers, I'm all for it at 160. But if he was going to take a big fight against Charlo, against Munguia, or anyone else, Andrade at 160, I just don't see it. I don't want it. Golovkin is a legend. I don't want him to go backwards.
Dave Moretti, as I look at the official scorecard, had it 116, 112. That's fine. Steve Weisfeld, as you mentioned, 115, 113. He scored 4 of the last 5 rounds for Gennady Golovkin, which, to be fair, Golovkin did pick up the pace in the second half of this fight. David Sutherland, he scored 4 of the last 5 rounds for Golovkin as well. Those were where the rounds I gave him. I gave him 2 of the last 5 rounds. I just think it's charitable, really. And that brings me to my point here.
I know what you're going to say.
2 of the judges, Weisfeld, Moretti, they scored Canelo Golovkin 2. They scored it 115, 113 for Canelo. One of my immediate reactions is, because judges are human, like, does a part of them, when they see Golovkin start to pick it up, just throw that triple jab? And
they throw him a bone.
And like, they give him the benefit of
the
doubt.
They throw him a bone and say, you know what? We didn't get it right 3 years ago. We didn't get it right the first time. They didn't get it right the second time. We finally got to throw Triple G a bone. But this was the wrong bone to throw at, because this was not the Triple G that we're accustomed to seeing. Golovkin looked every bit of his age. I mean,
all right. So let's put aside the judging then, and just talk about the fight. Did that go how you expected it to go, or what was your reaction to how it went?
No, it didn't. I just think Golovkin looked old. He looked like an old fighter. There was no snap in his punch. There was no shotgun jab. The big drama show didn't arrive at any moment. I mean, even when we gave him the rounds, it wasn't like he convincingly beat up Canelo or won those rounds convincingly. It's just, okay, Golovkin won that one. Canelo, on the other hand, he was impressive, but he wasn't the Canelo we expected. I expected Canelo to be ripping the body. I expected Canelo to be backing him up, really trying to pulverize Golovkin. But obviously, there was something there that he had to respect. It wasn't the jab, and it wasn't body shots from Golovkin, but it must have been something. Okay, but I can't get off the judging, Mannix. I cannot judging.
We're going to have a deeper dive at some point to the judging, because it's got to be fixed. Steve Weisfeld, who I have tremendous respect for, you know, I always call him the gold standard in boxing judging. He's had a tough year.
And I agree.
He gave the Canelo Bivol fight 115-113 for Bivol. That was a lot wider than it should have been. And this fight was tough. David Sutherland, tough card as well. You could tell from the opening bell, Golovkin looked old, like he did. And we shouldn't be surprised, because in the last 4 years, he has taken largely mid to low level fights. I mean, Sergey Derevyanchenko, on paper, not a bad win, but that was Derevyanchenko after he had fought Daniel Jacobs and after Jermall Charlo. Right. Or is that Charlo as well? So he was a little bit past his prime. Then you move on, and he's fighting Ryota Murata, who is a middleweight champion, but I think you'd agree the weakest of the middleweight champions
title holder
out there. Look, and he gave Golovkin trouble in the first few rounds. He hurt Golovkin in the first few rounds. He just didn't have the talent that Canelo has to do it. So I just thought Golovkin looked old. To his credit, again, like, sixth round comes around, and he starts to pick up the gas. Like, he starts throwing.
Yeah, because Jonathan Banks was getting on him. He's saying, basically, like, do everything we train to do. We are prepared for this. You need to get more aggressive. You need to throw the jabs. You need to bang. He was telling him everything he needed to hear, but Golovkin wasn't doing it because he couldn't pull the trigger anymore. The thing about getting older, when you become an older fighter, and, you know, my last fight was at 38. That's when I knew I won, and I knew I was done with. Your legs go, but your confidence goes. And I didn't have power. See, the thing about power punchers, they can actually fight until the older in their age. But Golovkin, even his power wasn't enough.
Yeah.
His power wasn't enough. The jab, the shotgun jab that he was murdering people with that jab. It wasn't there. The body punching,
even Canelo
wasn't
early
there.
On, Canelo in the first two fights, he was throwing that jab. He was following up with the right hands. He looked a lot like most Canelo opponents who were timid about throwing the right hand, because, as you know, when you throw it, you expose yourself,
right,
and you leave yourself open for counter shots. And Canelo was throwing heavy shots, especially in the first half of that fight. On Canelo, I thought he looked great, man. Like, I guess there were some questions about what Canelo would look like after a loss to Dimitri Bivol, but back at his natural weight, back at 168 pounds, he looked like the best fighter in the world once again.
I wouldn't go that far, Mannix. I would say he looked really, really good. I wouldn't go with great. I wouldn't go with pound for pound number one. I think if he would have stopped Golovkin, then yeah.
Nobody stops Golovkin.
Like, true. Nobody stops him.
I'll give you that. But right now, I can't go and say that was a great performance by Canelo because...
of course it was great. You thought he won 10 rounds to 2. Why is that not a great performance?
It was a convincing win, but it wasn't the cherry on top. He
you
promised
beat the unified middleweight champion.
Yeah, but at 168. He promised the knockout. He was going to go
for it. Golovkin is still like had spent... That's like Marvin Hagler shit. When Golovkin was spending all that time at 160. 16 years, he's basically been a 160-pounder. That's wild to begin with. But look, I think 168 was fine. It's still the same fighter.
Yeah, no, but here's the thing.
Remember when Canelo was smaller than him? Remember that?
In the first round, I said it. I said Golovkin doesn't have the body of a 168-pounder. And his power didn't carry either because the thump wasn't there. Usually when Golovkin's throwing punches, you can hear them. You can hear them bouncing off the shoulders and the top of the gloves and the head. The thump wasn't there.
Yeah.
The aggression wasn't there.
He tried a
the
couple times.
The motivation was
that corkscrew. Yeah, he tried a couple times.
It wasn't happening.
Wasn't happening for him.
The ambition, the monster that we're accustomed to seeing, the big drama show, was not there tonight. Mm. And whatever the two judges saw, I'm going to keep going to that. I need to know what they saw. They need to write a report. You need to get them on the podcast. Someone needs to find out what did they see. Because
I agree.
Just
the Nevada Commission should investigate that. I think
it's
the Nevada
incredible
should look
to me.
At it. Yeah.
I just think they threw Golovkin a bone after coming up short with the first two fights.
I tend to agree with that. All right, so
I'm over the scorecards. Max.
Probably not. Just for now, right now you're over the scorecard. You know what made Canelo's performance even more impressive to me? In the ring afterwards, he was telling me that his left hand was so hurt he couldn't hold a cup all week. Like, I don't know what that means. He said it needs surgery. The fact that he went ahead, if it's as bad as he says, and if he does need surgery in the coming weeks, the fact that he went ahead and fought Gennady Golovkin with a left hand that was so bad that it's going to need surgery, that's impressive. That really is. And if you can't use that left hand the way you'd like and still dominate, that shows me some level of greatness.
Absolutely. And it will show you that, how great of a fighter Canelo is, not canceling a big show like this. Because can you imagine after so long that we waited for this trilogy
to wait till like May of 2023
to cancel it because of that?
41.
That goes to show you Canelo is not only a great boxer, but he's a great businessman, a great promoter in his mind. And
it's Avni Yildirim. Remember, he fought Avni Yildirim after having like COVID 3 weeks before.
Remember when he fought Rocky Fielding when his brother got kidnapped?
Yeah. He guess he perseveres,
Canelo
man.
Puts business first. And that's a promoter's dream because sometimes boxers cancel on little injuries. You can fight through those injuries, but what Canelo does is on another level, and that's why he's so special. That's why he's Canelo.
Yeah. All right. Moving and looking ahead for both guys. Let's start with Canelo, the winner. He's gonna have surgery. He said his body needs a rest. He seemed pretty fatigued talking to him. Like, I don't know if you picked up on that, but he was like, "Man, I gotta take a break. I need some time off and allow my body to heal." That presumably means May of 2023. The target, I assume, is Dimitri Bivol, 175-pound champion. Bivol's got some business of his own first. He's got to beat Zerto Ramirez, that fight on November 5th. That's not a tough fight because Zerto's going to weigh like 225 pounds when he gets into the ring with a light heavyweight. But assuming Bivol gets through, is that the right fight for Canelo? Should Canelo go back to 175, face Bivol, or should he look around at the David Benavidez is of the world, Jermall Charlo, some good fighters on the PBC side of the street?
We have no say in that, Mannix.
I'm asking you. It's a podcast.
I understand that, but you're dealing with greatness. Whatever I say doesn't matter. But okay, what would I do?
Yeah.
Go for Bivol. It's that Mexican machismo, man. Go for Bivol, the guy that beat you. I mean, Floyd Mayweather beat you, almost a decade ago. Great. You were just too young for that. That gets past. You can put that in the back burner. But to lose in your absolute prime when you're number one, top dog in the entire world, pound for pound, and not only lose, but lose convincingly against Bivol, you got to get that back. You can't just let that slide. So if I was Canelo, right back to that in May. Absolutely.
I get the sense that Canelo will train like a madman for that fight. Like, I don't think he trained as hard as he should have. But he said this for the first Bivol fight. Because how many times do we see him on social media golfing and like, not screwing around because he still takes his job seriously?
Do you remember in the fighter meeting, I said, we asked him, are you still golfing? He says, no, I put that aside. And then I thought it was because he was training hard for Golovkin. And then Todd asked him that and he says, no, it's just been too hot.
Too hot. But he also told me afterwards, I want to make sure I'm 100% focused on that. Now, look, I don't think he was at his best against Bivol because I don't think he took Bivol as seriously as he needed to. I mean, it's somewhat understandable because before Canelo, Bivol looked kind of like shit in some of his previous fights. He went life and death with Craig Richards over in the UK. I mean, he couldn't get Lennon Castillo out of there a few fights early. Like, he didn't look like a world beater.
He didn't look like a world beater because he doesn't take chances. And that's exactly.
He took chances against Canelo, though.
No, he didn't. He showed discipline.
He threw combinations.
He would throw combinations, but then he would stop anytime Canelo was against the ropes and he would go back to the middle of the ring. That's discipline. He wanted the fight in the middle of the ring. Canelo was playing possum against the ropes, telling him to come on. Bivol was like, no. Come back over here. I'm going to keep popping this jab in your face. No, that wasn't a typical performance. That was a masterpiece for Bivol on the jab part, and the fact that he had the discipline to carry it through in 12 rounds.
All right, can Canelo beat Bivol at 175?
It's going to be hard, but yeah, I think he could. It's going to be hard, though. He has to get past that jab. He has to do something to get past that jab.
Very disciplined jab, as you said.
He has to get past that jab. And, you know, the way that I used to get past guys that were better jabbers than me, we used to just right hook the elbow. So we knew that we couldn't out jab this guy. So we just hit the hell out of the elbow, and they will stop from throwing that. So he needs to come up with something to get past that jab. He does that, then, yeah, he can make it a closer fight.
That's still a huge fight in Las Vegas. Even bigger if Bivol beats Zerto, because that would be a quality win and another Mexican, you know, trophy for Bivol.
Not only that, Mannix, but can you imagine if Dimitri Bivol wins in Abu Dhabi, what makes you think that he won't go to Mexico and fight Canelo in his home turf? The money's right.
I agree. Money's the big thing, though.
If you're going to Abu Dhabi across the world, why won't you go to Mexico?
Abu Dhabi's putting up a lot of money. Like, the Middle East is putting up money for that fight. That's why. Mexico ain't putting up that kind of money. It'll do a big crowd, but Mexico ain't putting up. You're Mexican. Is Mexico putting up that kind of money? All right, I don't think so.
Probably not. But it'll fill Azteca Arena. Oh, it'd be awesome. 100,000 fans. So, yes.
I hope one of those years that Canelo fights three times, one of them is like a Rocky Fielding type fight.
You may not get the money, but you'll get the history. They can probably beat the record that Chavez and Haugen did in over 100,000.
Well, think about
stadium.
It. How cool was Canelo Saunders? Like, that wasn't a big gate.
72,000,
a record, indoor record. Right. During a pandemic, like, that wasn't as big a gate as he gets in Las Vegas. Like, you know, this weekend probably will clear.
But it was memorable.
It was memorable. It was incredible. So, yeah, I'm with you. I'm actually with you on that. I'd love to see him do that. I just don't think he'll do that against Dimitri Bivol. All right, last thing to talk about. Gennady Golovkin's 40. He is still the unified middleweight champion even after this loss. He told me in the ring he plans to keep fighting. He still has those two belts. He's also said to me, I want to fight in Australia. I want to fight in the UK. I want to fight in my native Kazakhstan. What should the future look like for Gennady Golovkin? If you were Gennady Golovkin, what would you do?
I wouldn't leave money on the table, that's for sure.
Is still a lot of money on the table.
There is a lot of money on the table, so I wouldn't leave it on the table. Even though he made, what, $20 million today? There's still a lot of money to be made, and you dedicate it to your life to this sport, this trade, so you got to maximize it all the way to the end. As long as you're not getting knocked out or brutally beaten, I think he should continue doing it, but at 160. Stay away from 168. His body didn't look as chiseled as it normally looks at 160.
You mentioned that early in the fight.
He looks softer. His torso, his lower body area looks soft, and he looked a little older because he is. So if he's going to be facing B and C level competition, do the world tour. Take the big drama show on tour. But if you're going to be facing the elite, these younger champions, these Charles, the Benavides, and Andres into the world, no way. Munguia.
Yeah, like Janabek. Like, you don't want Janabek in Kazakhstan.
Munguia is an exception.
Do you think you should fight Munguia?
I think Munguia is his next. That's the next big drama show fight for him.
I actually would hate that.
And he gets his respect back with that because he fights a young, undefeated big champion that stands in front of him.
I think Munguia beats him, though,
at the stage. Hey, all I'm saying is, stylistically, that's the best matchup for him.
Munguia's gotten so much better in recent years.
Stylistically, that's the best
matchup. And, you know, we talked to Gabe Rosado about this. Munguia's got a granite chin. Like, Munguia can take a punch.
So does Golovkin.
I know, but Munguia throws, like, 5, 6, 7 punch combinations. He's all offense.
That's the fight,
man.
That's the fight.
I'd love to see it. I honestly would love to see it.
That brings the respect back, the confidence back, and the belief of the fans. Because right now, the fans are saying, that wasn't the Golovkin we're used to seeing. We said the exact same thing on the telecast. But if he beats a young whippersnapper, an undefeated guy like Munguia, it's kind of like, whoa, wait a minute. It's like Roberto Duran coming back and beating Iran Barkley. We got to give him another chance. Roberto Duran coming back beating Davey Moore. We got to give him another chance. Old guys keep getting other chances if they beat these young, you know, prospects, champions. So give him another chance. Munguia is the next one if you are going to take a big chance.
Did you really just say whippersnapper?
I did say whippersnapper. Young whippersnapper.
All right. Can we go to the bar now?
Yes.